Good afternoon, America. Welcome to the Dean's List. I'm Dean Bowen, and you, my friends, are listening to America Out Loud Talk Radio. Thank you for being on board. We are happy to have you, and especially on a day like today. Do you know what today is? Is anybody, do you know? Are you aware? No, you're not. You're not aware? Well, today is Harvard's birthday. Ultimately, it's Harvard's birthday. Now, it's not the birthday of its founding. Today is the day Harvard got its name. Yes, it's its name day. It is its name birthday. And I've got to tell you, boy, have we fallen. Boy, oh boy, have we fallen. From 1639, I don't know, what is that? 17, 18, 19, you know, almost 400 years ago. In 400 years, we have fallen far from the tree, my friends. We have fallen far from the tree. We're going to look at that. Yeah, maybe I feel a history class coming in. I don't know. I think I do. I think I'm feeling a history class. Some of our favorite historians are David Barton, Bill Federer, and William J. Bennett. Some of our favorites around here. And I think we just might have to delve into some history based upon the hard work of some of our favorite historians. I'm feeling it. March 13th, 1639, the oldest institution of highest learning in the United States was named for a Puritan minister, John Harvard, one of the school's earliest and greatest benefactors. Now, I know you know this. My audience knows this because we've talked about this. We have gone to the history class of Harvard's history a few times. I wouldn't say an overabundance because I don't know that you can have an overabundance of this kind of history. I think it's important that we talk about it a lot because if we just talk about it once, it's too easy to forget. Mother, my friends, is the repetition of memory. Did that come out right? No. Repetition, my friends, is the mother of memory. That is it. That's how the saying goes. And so we repeat. Sometimes we just have to repeat things. We have to repeat history class. And so some of you have heard this. You know that John Harvard, a Puritan minister, bequeathed his property to Harvard University. I don't think we've ever looked at it from Bill Bennett's perspective. So we're diving into one of our favorite historians' perspective today, Bill Bennett. Today's the 13th of March. This took place in 1639. Close to 400 years ago. I mean, we're not that far off. Historians know little about John Harvard's life. He was the son of a London butcher. He was born in 1607 near the Surrey end of London Bridge. And as a young man, we do know that he received his education at Emmanuel College, which was part of the University of Cambridge. So here we are by the 1630s. His father and most of his family had died of the plague. His inheritance made him a well-to-do member of England's middle class. Faced, however, with religious persecution, Harvard joined the wave of Puritans emigrating to America for a better life and a chance to worship freely. That was the whole point. They didn't want to be under the tyrannical rules of the King of England. You know, We've detailed that. We've detailed that history. We know what was happening in the 1500s and the 1600s in England. We know the laws that were passed that, you had to be an Anglican. And if you weren't, well, by golly, bad things were going to happen to you. And so here John Harvard is. He's a Puritan. Puritans got their name because they wanted to purify the Anglican church. And they were working to purify it. And the king was like, I don't want to be purified. You better stop this. or I will kill you. That will be the ultimate end. You'll be fine. You'll be imprisoned, but eventually you're going to die. And that happened to several people. So John Harvard, he's like, I don't want this. I want to go to America because I hear that there are colonies there that are established by Puritans. And the religion there is not, it's one of a Puritan religion, but you're free to worship how you want. They're not going to force you to do what they say you got to do. And if you don't, then you're going to go to prison, you're going to be fined, you might even die. So in 1637, John Harvard and his wife, Anne, arrived in New England and became inhabitants of Charlestown, Massachusetts. That same year, he became a teaching elder at the First Church of Charlestown. This was a position that required him to explain scripture and give sermons. So he's got to study. He's someone who loves to study the Bible. He is a Puritan minister. However, unfortunately, he did not last long in the New World. A little more than a year after his arrival, John Harvard died of consumption. On his deathbed, though, he bequeathed 779 pounds, which was equivalent to half of his estate, and a collection of about 400 books to a college that had been founded in 1636, just a year earlier. This college was in Newtown, which is now Cambridge, Massachusetts. It was a generous gift, one that helped launch the fledgling college on its mission to educate students in a classical curriculum and Puritan theology. In 1639, the Massachusetts General Court decided to name the school Harvard College in honor of the Puritan minister. Do you think that if the folks at Harvard, do you think they know this history? I mean, really, do you think Claudine Gay is aware that Harvard was named after a Puritan minister? And if so, you think she's happy about it? I mean, they probably mock it and make fun of it. Today, the name Harvard is a good reminder that many of this country's finest universities trace their roots to churches and clergymen who realize that without educated citizens, America could not thrive. So that is that last sentence that Bill Bennett makes. That's a big one. It is. It's a big one because we have forgotten this. We have forgotten the history here. Now you haven't, this audience hasn't. But many people in America, they don't know this. They don't know where the name Harvard comes from. They don't know where any of the collegiate names come from. And they don't know that most of them, especially the Ivy Leagues, were founded by ministers to be colleges trained to train the clergy, to train ministers, because they wanted ministers who could read. They wanted them to be literate. And this is a fine reminder that our oldest, our finest universities, this is their roots. And it's because they realized that without, and here's the phrase he says, that they realized that without educated citizens, America could not thrive. Doesn't it feel like they almost want the citizenry today to not be educated so America will not thrive? Don't you feel that way? I do. I feel that way. If you've listened to me long enough, I think what's happening is happening on purpose. It's not due to incompetence. It's due to a plan. The plan is that America not thrive. The point was that the citizens of the country, especially the clergy, would be literate, that they could read, that they could write, that they should receive a classical education. And this was the objective. Because a classical education, my friends, is the finest education you can have. They knew it then. We know it now. At least some of us know it. We get it. We understand that the garbage that's being put out now is not education. If it's a lie, you're not being educated. If you're being fed a bill of goods, you're not being educated. If the teacher is standing in front of the classroom that your little children are in, and the teacher's lying to your children are not being educated. In order to receive an education of value or merit or worth, the truth has to be told. And we are not in a place right now where the truth is being told. Back then we were, but we have fallen far, far, far from the tree. So far from the tree. Yesterday, we talked about the fear of the Lord being the beginning of wisdom, and the fear of the Lord being the beginning of knowledge. And this is what education used to be. This is the pretense under which it was delivered, back here, back in the day. As a matter of fact, I've got there's a wonderful article here that David Barton has. Oh, my cousin Kelly bought me a Bible. It's called the Founder's Bible. It is a great, it's a tome. And in this Bible, it's put out by wall builders. And David Barton is the signature historian, and he's got several articles that are in this Bible. I don't know if Wall Builders is the publisher or not. Doesn't say Wall Builders is the publisher. Shiloh Road Publishers. I don't want to give credit where it's not actually due. Although David Barton is part of, he is Wall Builders, but his name is on this. He's the signature historian, and he's got articles really throughout the Bible that pertain to particular verses, particular passages, and they're articles that are about our founding. And how the founding relates to this particular passage. And there's there, and so yesterday, and the reason I bring this up is because yesterday I mentioned Proverbs 1:7. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, but fools despise wisdom and instruction. I brought this up yesterday. I brought up 9 and 10, which says the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. And I was talking about, wisdom and knowledge. And I didn't know that this article was in the Founder's Bible, actually. And so I'm reading it this morning. And I thought, I want to pull out the Founder's Bible and see what it has to say. And right here next to Proverbs 1:7, David Barton has this glorious article. I'm not going to read the whole thing. I'm going to read bits and pieces of it though, because it's so timely, as they say. So the verse that it relates to is the one I cited yesterday, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. And Barton says this verse affirms that all knowledge begins with the fear of the Lord. But for some inexplicable reason, he says, many Christians today interpret it as applying only to spiritual knowledge. While this aspect of knowledge is certainly included, he says, the verse does not confine itself only to that area. It just says knowledge, pure and simple. And I, you know what? If we were going to do a word study here, which we do here at Waterbrook, we do in Bible class, we do word studies. We dive into the Hebrew meaning of words. We dive into the Greek meaning if it's in the New Testament, and it would be a blast to dive into the Hebrew root of knowledge. We're not going to do that because, I don't want to turn this into a Bible lesson, although I'm saying it would be fun and you probably would enjoy it. We'll just take the word for its sake. Knowledge is the word. And Barton is saying it's just knowledge, period. It doesn't necessarily refer to spiritual knowledge. It's just knowledge. And you can have a specified knowledge in a particular area. That's true. But this verse, according to Solomon, just simply says, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. That's it. Barton says strikingly, for nearly four centuries, Americans believed that the fear of the Lord was the beginning of academic knowledge. For example, America's first college, Harvard, was established in 1636, and its rules declared. Now, we've read these rules before, but I'm going to read them again just because it's the anniversary of the naming of Harvard. And this is important. It's important to note how far we've fallen. Here's what the rules and regulations of Harvard in 1636 stated. Let every student be plainly instructed and earnestly pressed to consider well the main end of his life and studies is to know God and Jesus Christ, which is eternal life, and therefore to lay Christ in the bottom as the only foundation of all sound knowledge and learning. You think they still believe that today at Harvard? That Jesus Christ is at the very foundation of all sound knowledge and learning? Do you think they believe today that the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge and the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom? No, I can tell you right now, they don't. No, sirree, Bob, they do not. And if they were to listen to me today, if they were to just turn on America Out Loud today live and hear me live, they would probably label me a buffoon, a backwoods right-wing religious nut job. I'm sure they would. You know, but that's fine. That's their prerogative. I mean, they don't recognize the truth when it slaps them upside the face. I mean, they think that men can be women and women can be men. You know, so I'm not offended. Yeah, I'm not offended if they were to say that about me, because you know, they don't recognize truth. All right, back to the Harvard rules and regulations. I interrupted myself. So back in the day, they believed that Christ was the very foundation of all sound knowledge and learning. And seeing the Lord only giveth the wisdom, let everyone seriously set himself by prayer in secret to seek it of him. Oh, back in the day, Harvard really believed that verse in James that says, if you want wisdom, ask God and he'll give it to you. Now, they believed it. They said, if you see that it's true that the Lord only gives wisdom, then let everyone seriously pray in secret and seek it and ask God for it. Ask God for wisdom. He'll give it to you because the fear of the Lord is, well, it's the beginning of wisdom. All right, the rules and regs continue. Everyone shall so exercise himself in reading the scripture twice a day that he shall be ready to give such an account of his proficiency therein. Yeah, so we've talked about this. We know, we get it. We understand that this is what they believed. And they also believed, this is interesting, they also believed that Satan did not want us to be literate, that he wanted an illiterate society. So the very first law that ever had to do with education in the colonies, 1642, and it's referred to as the Old Deluder's Satan Law, or the Old Deluder Satan Act, Act or Law. You can, it's called both. And here's what it says. It being one chief project of that old deluder Satan to keep men from the knowledge of the scriptures as in former times. And therefore it went on. We need to have education. The kids need to know how to read. I just love it though. They in the law, it literally says it being one chief project of that old deluder, Satan, that old deluder. Satan's nothing but an old deluder. And he wanted to keep men from the knowledge of scriptures as in former times. And it was their belief that people needed to know the scriptures and therefore they needed to know how to read. They needed to be illiterate. They needed to be literate, not illiterate. They needed to be literate. They needed to know how to read so they could read the scriptures for themselves so that they could understand indeed on their own that the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. And the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. So in 1690, America's first public school textbook was published, and it's referred to as the New England Primer. I actually have a copy of it here on my bookshelf, the New England Primer. It was reprinted frequently for the next 2.5 centuries. It's what we used in teaching the kids how to read. It was a common text from which American students learned to read from first grade on. Prominent in the first grade textbook was the rhyming alphabet. All right, so ABC, but next to each letter was a little rhyme. And the rhymes all had to do with the Bible. Well, here it is. Here's A. A. In Adam's fall, we sinned all. B. Heaven defined the Bible mind. C. Christ crucified for sinners died. So that's how they learned the ABCs with a Bible rhyme. They believed so deeply that religion and morality were intertwined. So the English primer also contained more than 100 questions in it, which included some of the following. Here's an example. Oh, this is so, this is, oh, and I'm up against it. All right, tell you what, I am up against the break. I will dive into these questions from the New England Primer on the other side. You're going to want to stick around. I don't mean to tease you like this on purpose, but this is so good. All right, we'll pick this up on the other side. You're listening to the Dean's List on America Out Loud Talk Radio.
58 million people suffer from joint aches and stiffness in the U.S. every day. Ignoring chronic joint discomfort can affect mobility and your quality of life. Advanced nutrition company, Healthy Cell, created Joint Health and Mobility to support connective tissue, joint lubrication, and reduce joint irritation with curcumin, omega-3, chondroitin, glucosamine, and hyaluronic acid for joint comfort and flexible range of motion. And Healthy Cell's not a pill. It's a patent-pending gel you swallow with clinically proven ultra-absorption of science-backed ingredients. You would need to take 11 pills to get the same amount of nutrients in each gel pack. And these great-tasting gels come in a small packet. Tear off the top, shoot it down, or mix it in water. It's 100% drug-free joint support. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first order. HealthyCell.com, code OUTLOUD for 25% off.
Millions of Americans are needlessly suffering from the long-haul effects of the toxic spike protein. Dr. Peter McCullough and his team at The Wellness Company designed their spike support formula to counteract harmful spike protein from COVID-19 and vaccines so you can feel your best. Go to OutLoudCare.com today and use code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first order.
World-class care from doctors you can trust, all from the comfort of your home. That is One Wellness. Dr. Peter McCullough and his team at The Wellness Company launched the One Wellness membership to provide free monthly supplements and unlimited telemedicine access with doctors that share your values. The Wellness Company's chief medical board designed every supplement and medical protocol with your health in mind. From groundbreaking supplements like the Spike Support Formula to unique care like Freedom from Big Pharma. Join a healthcare system that puts your health and well-being above the interest of Big Pharma's bottom line. It's the way healthcare should be, with a company that shares your values. Go to OutLoudCare.com today and use code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first month of One Wellness.
Welcome back to the Dean's List. I'm Dean Bowen. You are listening to America Out Loud Talk Radio. You can find us here Monday through Friday at the 2 p.m. Eastern time slot. We are happy to have you on board. Thank you for being one of the smart ones and being a part of the America Out Loud radio family. All right. I did not mean to leave you hanging at the end of that last segment. All right. So we're talking about the New England Primer. This was our first textbook, 1690. This was the book that was used to teach the kids how to read. All right. And I said that the ABCs, you know, they had the letter. There was a little rhyme after every letter. All right. A, in Adam's fall, we sinned all. And then all the way down. There's also some questions. It contained more than 100 questions, just like the ones I'm about to share with you. But these questions are important because right now, when I read this to you, if there's a leftist, a progressive Marxist teacher, in public education right now, And when they discover that this was the foundation of our public education, their heads are going to explode, just explode. And it's going to be fantastic. All right, here we go. Just as a sample, one of the questions, which is the fifth commandment? I mean, that seems like a simple question, right? Does anyone know what the fifth commandment is? I mean, right now your heads are spinning. Even if you don't know what the fifth commandment is, you can probably take a stab in the dark what it is based upon, this whole attack, this whole assault that we're going through on parental rights right now. You can just take a wild guess at what the fifth commandment is, and you'd probably be right just based upon what's happening right now in our culture. Yeah, if you guessed honor your father and mother, you nailed it. That is the fifth commandment. Honor your father and mother. And this was taught in the New England Primer. This was part of our public education, which is the fifth commandment. Why do you think they would ask kids what the fifth commandment is? Because they believed in the sanctity of parental authority. They believed and they understood that parents were the ultimate authority. Regardless, it doesn't matter, bar none, parents are the authority. They have the right to raise the child. And it's important that the child give honor to the parents. The child has to understand their place. Yet the child needs to understand his or her place in the chain of command, in the chain of authority. Parents are the top dog. The kids are not. All right. The kids did not produce the parents. I know, contrary to their popular belief, the parents produced the kids. The parents created the kids. The parents are in charge of the kids. The kids need to honor the parents. This is the commandment. Today, it's not that way. Today, it's, well, I mean, if your parents don't affirm who you think you are, by golly, we'll come and get you. And then we'll put you in a home where people will affirm you and they'll love you. Your parents don't love you. I mean, that's the message. That's the teaching. That's the education. And it's not education because it's a lie. Anything, my friend, anything that is a lie, it's not education. It's the opposite of education. I don't know what the opposite of education is. Okay, I guess we could come up with a word. Dumbing down, that doesn't do it justice. But when you're being told a lie, you're not being educated. But see, here in the New England Primer, the truth was foundational. And the truth was the fifth commandment, honor your father and mother. That was one of the questions. What's the fifth commandment? The second question, what is required in the fifth commandment? Well, it's required that the kids honor the mom and dad. That's the requirement, honor. The requirement is honor. Kids need to honor their parents. Does that mean, wait, are you telling me that the parents are in charge of deciding if the child should get a become a new gender? Yeah, are you, is that what you're saying, Dean? Because that doesn't seem right. Isn't the child in charge of their own? I mean, if you're 12 and live in Colorado, I guess the child's in charge based upon the law, but not in reality. No, the parents are in charge. If the parent says, Johnny, I'm sorry, you're not a little girl, you're a little boy, that is the most loving thing that parent can do for that child. It's not an unloving thing. It's not abuse, as it's being, called in some places. This article that I pulled up the other day, it's sitting here in my stack. I still haven't gotten to it, where Indiana is justifying taking children from parents if the parents don't use the preferred pronoun. Now, that's the headline of the article. The sub headline is, if Supreme Court doesn't rebuke Indiana, all child welfare cases will become unreviewable when the child turns 18. Parents of gender-confused child who's now an adult warns, and Oregon's gender-affirming adoption rules are also under review. This is where we are. This is, our education in this country way back when, in the 1600s, 1700s, even 1800s, up until the 1800s, even into the probably in the early 1900s, even into the mid 1900s, David Barton says, and he gives some examples. Our education included this, the importance of children honoring their parents. All right, so here's another question. What is the reason annexed to the fifth commandment? Well, why? Well, what's the reason given for you to honor your mother and father? And so you'll have long life. I don't know how that works, quite frankly. I'm not that much of a scholar on the fifth commandment to know why, if you honor your parents, you're going to have a long life. I don't know what that is all about. But that's the reason. That's the reason given. So you'll have long life on the earth, on the land that God has given you. It's foundational, my friends. This truth is foundational, that we honor our parents, that we give them the honor due to them. We defer to them, especially if we're in school. But it's not that way in the public system, and you know it isn't. We've detailed it quite succinctly. We have gone to great lengths to talk about how horrible it is and the filth of it all. But that wasn't our foundation. And what Harvard's doing right now with their DEI garbage, that wasn't Harvard's foundation. All right, David Barton continues. He says in 1789, the first federal law to address education was passed by Congress and signed by President George Washington. We've talked about this. You know what it is. It's the Northwest Ordinance. It's one of my favorites. And Article 3 here, Barton gets into, is one of my favorites. He says Article 3 of that law directly linked religion and public education together. And he's spot on. Here's what Article 3 says. Religion, morality, and knowledge. Oh, knowledge? Really? Religion, morality, and knowledge? Yeah, you guessed it. Those three, the trifecta, being necessary to good government and the happiness of mankind. Wait, whoa, slow down. One of our first federal laws said religion and morality are necessary to good government? You got to be kidding me. I thought we had separation of religion and government. What happened to separation of church and state? These guys didn't know what they were talking about. So the guys that write the Northwest Ordinance are the exact same guys that write the Constitution. I mean, it's the same guys. They do it in the same summer. It's the same men. Yeah, it's the same men. Well, the Bill of Rights. So the First Amendment is, it comes. A little while later, but in many cases, it's probably not 100% the same men, but it's a lot of the same people involved in that First Amendment. Oh, just the frustration of it all to see where we started and to see where we are. But I didn't even connect religion and morality. So the article continues, and it says, after religion, morality, and knowledge being necessary to good government and the happiness of mankind, comma, schools and the means of education shall forever be encouraged. Okay, so religion, morality, and knowledge is tied directly to schools and this encouragement of education. This is the type of education that should be encouraged. And this is not the type of education that's being encouraged today. Well, it's encouraged at Waterbrook, and it's encouraged at other classical Christian schools throughout the country. And this, my friends, is why you want to have your child in a classical Christian school. Because religion, morality, and knowledge are necessary to good government and the happiness of mankind. And this should be the education that's encouraged. Every founding father that signed his name off on this bad boy and the Northwest Ordinance nailed it. 100% correctile. The founders believed, and in this first federal education law, they acknowledged that schools and education systems were a proper means to encourage the religion, the morality, and the knowledge that were so necessary to good government and the happiness of mankind. This philosophy of education continued well into the 20th century, according to David Barton. He says, a fact demonstrated by courses taught in public schools in Dallas, Indianapolis, St. Louis, Little Rock, and other districts across the nation. Those courses included a Bible study course of the Old Testament and a Bible study course of the New Testament. And they counted toward graduation in those schools. They were part of the graduation requirement, a class on the Old Testament and a Bible study on the New Testament. Lesson one in the New Testament course begins by having students read John 1 and then ask and then answer some of the following questions. So here we go. Another sampling. Are you ready? Where was Christ before he was born on earth? That's one of the questions that comes from John chapter 1. Because it says, in the beginning was the Word was with God, the Word was God. And then in verse 14 says, the Word was made flesh and dwelt among us. What title does John apply to Christ in this chapter? For what purpose was John sent by God? Name five things the angel told Mary concerning her child Jesus, and what does the word Jesus mean? This, my friends, was part of a graduation requirement in public schools into the 20th century. So the question is, why is this no longer a thing? But why is this no longer in practice? You know the answer if you've listened to me for any length of time. I mean, we've talked about it. 1962 and 1963, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled that after 320 years of the fear of the Lord being central to America's educational philosophy, it was time to make a change. 320 years. And all of a sudden they say, nope, this is unconstitutional. We've been doing this. The fear of the Lord has been foundational to our education for 320 years. And all of a sudden it isn't. Just like that, all of a sudden it isn't, and it's time to make a change. It's now time for public education to become completely secular. Okay, the difference between these two approaches has been dramatic. And it's been measurable, and I've got the receipts. And we've talked about the receipts. They're on my Instagram page. I have not talked about my Instagram page, but I don't have time to keep it up. I don't. I would love to keep it up. However, the receipts are on the Instagram page. And one of those receipts, David Barton talks about here, he says, for example, following the introduction of the new educational policy excluding the fear of the Lord, academic knowledge plummeted, evidenced by that dramatic decline in SAT scores. And so if you go to my Instagram page, I think it's the Dean's List 33. If you want to follow me on Instagram, I need to do a better job of keeping it. There's so much I could do to update it. There's clips that I do here from the show I could put on there. It's just time consuming. I need an intern. I need seven interns. All right. That's it, right? I just need some interns. I need some interns to call me and say, all right, we're gonna keep your Instagram page updated. That's because it's a lot. It's a lot to do. So I've got this chart on my Instagram page. It's the chart of the SAT scores, the line of demarcation at year 62, 1962, where from 54 to 62, test scores are up and down and up and down. It kind of looks like a heart monitor chart, like that display that printout of your heart, kind of up and down, up and down, up and down. Once we get to 63, 64, 62, 63, it just tanks. And this thing goes into a nosedive right up till about, I would say, 1980, 1979. It goes into a two-decade nosedive. SAT scores just plummet. They go into the basement, into the toilet. And then they try to struggle. Then they come back down. They try to struggle up again and into the 90s. And then they just decided, okay, we gotta change the test here because this looks horrible on us. And they did. And they did. They just simply changed the test. So it's not equal. It's not equivalent to look at the scores now. I mean, you have to see the plummet, right? I've got this chart on my Instagram page if you want to go look at it. So David Barton says here in this article, furthermore, in numerous recent international academic competitions, American high school students regularly finish last. So this is from, he's noting this from 2012. International academic competitions, American high school students regularly finish last, near the last, or in the bottom half of students and math and science testing. Math and science. All right. I mean, we know that right now, only one third of eighth graders in America are proficient in math. And that's going to continue to drop. I can tell you that right now. In fact, one recent international testing found that although American elementary students performed above average when compared with their peers in other nations, junior high students performed only at average, and American high school students finished at the bottom, well below average. The sequence of results prompted one national education magazine to observe, the longer U.S. students stay in school, the less they seem to know. The longer they remain in a public school, the dumber they become. I can say it that way, and I don't mean to offend. You know, if you went to a public school or graduate, I'm not trying to offend. I'm really not. I'm not trying to hit hot buttons on purpose. I'm just saying that the proof is in the pudding. It's here. It's before our very eyes. We're staring at the receipts. Another measurement reflecting the change is that of illiteracy. Barton continues, only a few decades ago, America had one of the world's highest literacy rates, but it now ranks a dismal 65th in the world among its nearly 200 nations. And a number of third world nations currently post higher literacy rates than the United States. All right. And again, we know that only a third of eighth graders are proficient in reading. And that number is going to continue to plummet. And my friends, the only solid answer is that we removed the foundational truths from education. You know, what Harvard started out, and this is where this whole conversation began. What Harvard started out on March 13th in 1939, when they changed the name to Harvard, is not what it is now. And education, unfortunately, has followed suit. I mean, it's horrible. Yet on the other hand, testing results routinely demonstrate that students who participate in faith-based education, whether home, Christian, or parochial schools, score several grade levels higher than their counterparts in public school on the same academic tests, regardless of demographic locations or socioeconomic status. What does that tell you? It tells you that the fear of the Lord means something. And those of us who believe the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom and knowledge, we're onto something. We are absolutely onto something. All right, I am up against another break. Let's pause here. We'll pick this up on the other side. You're listening to the Dean's List on America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Cholesterol, blood pressure, blood sugar, inflammation, and weight. These are all real-world problems that 87% of Americans are struggling with. Often, there are no symptoms. But left unattended, we become inundated with one health problem after another. It's time to fight back with Heal Right. Heal Right is a bar that you eat, but it's food as medicine that addresses the nutritional root cause of health issues in just 8 weeks. Developed by world-renowned scientists and backed by 15 years of research, Heal Right is effective, but it's also delicious and works without additional diet or lifestyle changes. Step out of the statistics and use food as medicine. Visit healright.com/outloud or americaoutloud.shop and use the code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
Clean, pure, With premium ingredients, Global Healing's pure plant protein offers 20 grams of protein per scoop, and it's a perfect way to maintain and build lean muscle while indulging yourself. It combines enzymes and probiotics to maximize nutrient absorption, improving digestion and your gut health. Available in vanilla and chocolate flavors, elevate your protein consumption while supporting your overall wellness with pure plant protein. Go to americaoutloud.shop and get 15% off using the code OUTLOUD. Global Healing, giving you the power to take control of your health naturally.
I'm so confused. I don't know what to do.
I'm afraid of going to the hospital.
My doctor tells me nutrition doesn't work.
Trust is earned. We are the Energetic Health Institute, and we want to earn your trust. Natural medicine, holistic nutrition, detoxification, fasting, cellular healing, and so much more. Remember, the best way to be free is to be healthy. So stop being a patient and start being a student at energetichealthinstitute.org.
Welcome back to the Dean's List. I'm Dean Bowen. You are listening to America Out Loud Talk Radio. Thank you for being a loyal listener. Thank you for being a part of the conversation. Thank you for just wanting to make America better. I believe that about this audience, that this is a group of people that truly want to make America better. And my friends, we've got some purpose here. We do. We've got a job to do. We have, it's a big task before us, but all of us have a purpose in this. We all have a role in this. And our role, I've said it over and over, our role is to speak our values. It doesn't matter where you are. It doesn't matter if you're behind a microphone. It doesn't matter if you have a large, captivating audience. It doesn't matter if you speak to hundreds of people a day. Even if you talk to people at the grocery store and that's it, your neighbors or your immediate family. It is irrelevant, the number of people. What is relevant is that you share your values. If we share and speak our values, we can turn this thing around. And that we've got a purpose here. And for me, I truly believe that in maintaining my purpose, I've got to stay healthy. And I think you have to have that same mentality. We do. We have to have that mindset. We have to stay healthy. We have to stay locked in. We have to be in charge of our health. And there are a plethora of products at the network, on the shop, americaoutloud.shop. Just go to the shop. I'm taking, I use several of the products. You know, I love the Cofix RX. It's bailed me out this year. This school year, it has bailed me out. I would have been at home on the couch for weeks. I promise you, on more than three or four occasions, if it were not for Cofix RX. I firmly believe that. I take the spike. It's the spike protein anti-venom stuff that the wellness company puts out, because I don't want that spike protein in my system. And I trust Dr. McCullough. I trust Malcolm when Malcolm vets these products, and when McCullough puts this together and says, you know, take this spike formula, it will get that spike out of your system, that spike protein out of your system. I'm on board. My hand goes up because I want to stay healthy. I know what was happening to my heart that day I went into the ER when that thing was up, you know, 250 beats per minute, and people were coming out of the woodworks to hook me up to monitors and, you know, and to stop it. I mean, they injected me with something to stop my heart because they couldn't get it to calm down. And I'm like, I don't know what is in me, but if McCullough says take this spike support to get out that protein, I'm doing it. And I do. I take it. And they have this wonderful new product on the shop right now called Heal Right. It's these metallic health bars. And I take them. I take them because I trust the people that vet the product. And, you know, I encourage you, I just stay healthy. Just stay healthy. Go to the shop and see what's going to keep your health at an optimum level, and then go after it. Because you guys, we've got a job to do. I'm not kidding around about this. I'm truly not. I'm not trying to just, you know, sell you a product. I'm dead serious. We have a job to do. We have a country to restore. Now, we started this conversation out by wishing Harvard happy anniversary, because today's the anniversary of their name. March 13th, 1639, they become Harvard College, named after a Puritan minister, John Harvard. That was our beginning. That was the beginning of the conversation today, and that was the beginning of our educational founding. And now, look, I'm holding this article here from, I think this article's from Epoch Times. And here's the headline. Are you ready for this headline? I don't think you're ready. Here's the headline. John Hopkins diversity chief resigns after backlash to, quote, privileged labels on white males and Christians. John Hopkins diversity chief. So we have come almost 400 years where the fear of the Lord was the beginning of our wisdom and our knowledge, to now where we have diversity chiefs in just about every university in the country. I mean, Harvard has a diversity chief. They all have these diversity officers. And it's pathetic. It's horrible. If I had time, I don't have time today. I'm up against it. I wish I had time. The House Higher Education Subcommittee a couple of days ago had a hearing on the real impact of DEI on college campuses. And it is, I'm telling you what, I might play some clips of it tomorrow. I just don't have time to get to it today. It'll knock your socks off. I mean, pull your socks up high to your kneecaps, because when you hear clips from this hearing, it's going to knock those socks right off. The fact that there are diversity offices in these universities is... So this article says a John Hopkins medicine diversity officer has stepped down from her position after a backlash to a newsletter she sent to hospital staff, in which she declared that white men, Christians, and English speakers, among others, have inherent unearned privileges. Well, I mean, I'm all three of these. I'm a white Christian English-speaking man. And I guess the privileges that I have, they're inherent and unearned. I didn't earn a single thing. I didn't earn any of it. The station that I've arrived at in life, I did not earn it, according to her. That's a bunch of... Okay, Dean. Dr. Sherita Golden will leave her role as Chief Diversity Officer for Johns Hopkins University and continue her research in endocrinology and metabolism as a faculty member, the medical school announced Tuesday. All right, so she still is going to be there. She's just not going to lead their diversity office. Here's what the Johns Hopkins Medicine Leadership Team, Dr. Theodore DeWeese, the chief executive, and Kevin Sowers, the president. Here's what they had to say. She's been a valuable member of the Johns Hopkins Medicine Leadership Team, and like many of you, we wanted her to stay in her role, but we respect her decision. Yes, please stay. Please stay in your role. We don't care that you're a racist bigot. Please stay in your role. We don't care that you hate men. We don't care that you hate white men. We don't care that you hate white men who only speak English. Stay in your role. I'm interested to know if Dr. Theodore DeWeese and Kevin Sowers are white, English-speaking Christian men. That's what I'm interested in. I mean, they're probably not Christian men. If they were, they probably, I wouldn't think they'd be buying into this bunk. So here it is. In a monthly Diversity Digest email, this was sent in January, Dr. Golden defined privilege as, quote, a set of unearned benefits given to people who are in a specific social group. that operates on personal, interpersonal, cultural, and institutional levels. What does this even mean? Privileges are unearned and are granted to people in the dominant groups, whether they want that privilege or not, and regardless of their stated intent. Privilege is characteristically invisible to people who have it. Oh, so that's why I don't realize I have it, because it's invisible to me. Oh, now I get it. Because I'm a white man, I'm a Christian, I speak English, I don't think I have privilege. I feel like I've worked hard to get to where I'm at. Oh, but it's invisible to me if I have it. It's all making sense to me now. Of course she's right. People in dominant groups often believe they have earned the privileges they enjoy, or that everyone could have access to these privileges if only they worked to earn them. Dr. Golden, please, let me just, you live in the freest country on the planet. Everybody has the potential. Everybody. It doesn't matter what their skin color is. They have the potential to work hard and achieve things. You are, Dean, you be nice. Sometimes I just have to talk to myself and just calm myself down. Thomas Jefferson said, if you're really upset, just take 10 seconds and pause. But if you're really upset, count to 100, take 100 seconds. I can't have 10 seconds of silence here. It's radio. That just wouldn't fly. Certainly, I couldn't have 100 seconds of silence. Malcolm would be calling me. What's going on over there? The newsletter then provided a list of social identity groups that supposedly possess such privilege in the United States. Are you ready? Here it goes. It included men, Christians, white people, able-bodied people. Holy smokes, able-bodied people, they have privilege. Straight people, non-transgender people. Isn't that straight? I mean, if you don't like to pretend like you're a girl, if you're actually a man, you don't pretend like you're a woman. Doesn't that, aren't you straight? I mean, okay. Middle-aged people? Middle-aged people have privilege? What, so when you hit 40, all of a sudden, boom, you've got privilege you didn't know about? And English-speaking people. I'm all of these. I nail all of them. I'm white. I'm a man. I'm Christian. I'm able-bodied. I'm straight. I mean, I don't pretend to be a woman. I'm middle-aged, and I speak English. Holy smokes. And she's right. It's invisible to me. I didn't know I had the privilege. This is crazy how accurate. The newsletter went viral soon after it was publicized on X. It attracted more than 29 million views in the span of 24 hours. Of course it did, because people are upset about it. They're like, who's this crazy lady? I don't have time to keep going. I'm up against it. I wish I had time. Friends, the apple has fallen so far from the tree. It fell down from the tree and then it rolled down the hill. And then it ended up in the gutter. All right, that's all the time we have for today, America. We're going to get it back. We're going to get it back. We're going to keep going. Encourage your friends and family to get on the Dean's List. Let's unite to renovate the age.